This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Accessible and is located at 5800 Airline Drive.
This is Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
We sat around the dinner table one Friday night, my family, my parents, my brother's family, and aunts, uncles, cousins. Over the years, we've learned to try and stay away from the really hot topics. But on that night, immigration, the so-called illegal variety, somehow surfaced. As a family, we all share common origins, a group of modern American Jews whose ancestors left Eastern Europe 80 to 100 years ago, sailing in ships with few possessions, arriving in American harbors, announcing their names, and in the blink of an eye being granted official legal citizenship by gendarmes who themselves were probably of recent immigrant lineage. Still, despite this benign treatment, some members of my family, and one in particular, announced their opposition to the current crop of immigrants from Latin America. Humans first came to this continent, this hemisphere, around 15,000 years ago. Probably during the last ice age. 15,000 years may sound like a lot, but it's not. Humans populated Africa, Asia, Europe, all for 100,000 years. Of the major populated continents, only Australia has been populated by humans for less time than the Americas. The most common theory is that the original Americans appear to have come from Asia and arrived here via a massive frozen glacier, an ice bridge, that at the time linked Alaska and Siberia. From that original trek, humans spread throughout, across the North American plains to the Pacific and Atlantic coasts, down through the tropical climes of Central America, and ultimately throughout the vast jungles, mountains, and plains of South America, from the tip of the ice bridge to the tip of South America. There are theorists who posit other ideas, that humans crossed in boats from Asia, for example, but they too nevertheless envision a small band that gradually spread across the hemisphere. No one asked the original immigrants to show their papers, and no one made them citizens. The hemisphere was wide open. The cultures of future Native Americans derived from those original immigrants, and over 10,000 years, the traditions, industry, agriculture, and histories of the Sioux, Maya, Aztec, Incas, and so many more emblazon their impacts on the land. Those cultures claimed the land and made it theirs. In 1492, the first Europeans arrived in the hemisphere and immediately called the land theirs. They came with their own culture and technologies. Their culture made little, if any, allowance for the validity of those that they found here, and their technologies and diseases decimated natives. That eradication has been so rapid and so complete in many places, especially here in North America, that many, and probably most, descendants of the Europeans don't even blush when stating that the land is theirs, and pledging their patriotism to a place to which their fathers and mothers came at most 200 years ago, and many far less recently, as did mine. With natives dead or confined to reservations, there is not much here to remind the Europeans that they are relative newcomers. Feeling for the land is a function of the mind and heart. The real issue in immigration, of course, is control. And yet few Americans are willing to state that their current opposition to additional newcomers is based upon their control of the land. Instead, they tend to point to their law books and their patriotism. Proper historical readings are almost absent from the debate, since the right to the land does not hold up very well in the context of the history of the treatment of natives. There have even been takings of European land by other Europeans, for example, in the Mexican War. And yet, despite this dubious historical episode, modern Americans even state that modern Mexicans have no right to achieve legal citizenship, work for low wages, and live in areas that were forcibly taken from their ancestors by the ancestors of their employers. Whenever I am at my ranch, there are always at least a few minutes when I find myself wondering, is this really my land? Whose land is it? If it's mine, what made it possible for me to acquire it? Something I did? The property laws of the United States of America? How did it occur that this land came under those laws? Whose laws, if any, was it subject to before the current ones? Under what conditions would it cease to be mine? The issue of immigration is inextricably intertwined with the issue of land, and all of the issues that are concomitant with it, including the issue of nation. Those who oppose poor migrant workers fervently go all the way back to their beloved founding fathers, whether named Columbus or Washington or Houston, in expounding their patrimony and their stated right to enforce it. The great irony is that if they were to go back just a bit further, in some cases back just a few more years, they would find in the historical record that their founding fathers and mothers were immigrants who literally took this land, sometimes using force, cunning, and unequal strength of arms, from the descendants of that small band that crossed the Alaskan land bridge. And if you look closely at the faces of those in our factories, construction sites, of those pressed into immigration jails, indeed, of those working in our own kitchens, you too will see the descendants of the land bridge. Asiatic in color and appearance, they are the blood descendants of natives, and if you have any shame, you would acknowledge that they have as much right to be here as anyone. A few weeks ago, George Lakoff, the linguist, spoke here and was asked about the immigration issue. He responded that most immigrants to this country live very stressed economic lives, and that the poorest 25% of our population enables the other 75% to live very well, with clean homes, child care, and other cheap services. We should, in Lakoff's view, express only gratitude to those who come to this country, legal or not, for the enhanced economy that their cheap wages allow. Instead, many Americans loudly and shamelessly excoriate immigrants while at the same time accepting the economic benefits that they accord. At dinner that night with my family, it dismayed me greatly to listen as one of my own family members, someone only a few decades removed from immigrant status themselves, made statements against today's immigrants. My family members are in this country because 100 years ago, my ancestors bravely boarded ships to escape economic and racial hardships and availed themselves of liberal U.S. government immigration policies designed to bring people from Europe to populate the growing cities and factories and to settle the interior of the continent that had just been taken from natives by the U.S. government, its army, and its citizens. During my own lifetime, the southwestern part of the United States, states like Texas, California, and Arizona, has experienced a period of similar rapid growth. But in my lifetime, conservative U.S. government policy has failed to make sufficient legal room for today's brave, oppressed immigrants living not an ocean away, but just to the south of the national border. And even though they seek to come, and they have come, for the same economic benefits for which my own ancestors themselves came and automatically received citizenship, both the government and the citizenry seem to treat them differently. Where my own ancestors were allowed to enter a legal process that ultimately led to my own attendance at the nation's finest schools, today's immigrants are forced to arrive and work surreptitiously in the shadows. It is time that those who heap vitriol on immigrants get some back themselves. That night at dinner, I made a start of it. By the time dessert came, served of course by our longtime El Salvadoran housekeeper, I left no doubt in anyone's mind that it was actually I who felt most strongly about the issue of immigration. And though I doubt I changed any minds that night, I'm pretty sure I made clear that I would have no truck with the hypocrisy of modern American immigrant bashing. I'm Leo Gold. This is the New Capital Show. Back in a minute. Welcome back to the New Capital Show. I am Leo Gold, your host. A pleasure to be with you this morning on March 27th. In just a few minutes, I will be talking with Bill Tilney, who is the former mayor of El Paso. We will be talking about the immigration issue. We'll be happy to take your calls as well. 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Of course, the topic again, immigration to the United States of America. Our website, for those of you who wish to reach it, www.newcapitalshow.com. You can sign up for our mailing list. We have a new message line. It's an after-hours message line, so if there are remarks you want to leave, 713-568-6544, especially useful for those of us who are joining and listening to our show via podcast and who aren't able to listen live. This evening at the Progressive Forum here in Houston, Robert Redford is here in town this evening, and he will be joined by the mayor of Houston, former mayor of Dallas, and attorneys who worked on defeating the proposal by TXU, the power company, to build power plants. This is a subject that we covered extensively here on the New Capital Show last year. You can go back in our archives and find those shows. And tonight there will be a documentary film. I think it's called Fighting Goliath. I think there's still some tickets available. And if you go to progressiveforumhouston.org, I think you can get some more information on that. Should be great. On April 19th, Mothers for Clean Air is having a race. New Capital Show is one of the sponsors of this event. I won't be running. I don't think I could. I should run. Maybe I should run. Should I do that, Bob? Should I do that race? I don't have much time to get in shape. Maybe I'll do that. Bill's a runner. Bill Tilney's her owner. www.mothersforcleanair.org. www.mothersforcleanair.org. You can sign up for the race, I think, or just attend the race. And Terry Thomas at Mothers for Clean Air is doing a wonderful, wonderful job to make this a major annual event here in Houston. With that, I'd like to turn to my guest. Bill Tilney was born September 3rd, 1939, in East Los Angeles, California, to a Scottish immigrant father and a mother born in Lordsburg, New Mexico, to parents who were from Sonora, Mexico, and who themselves had fled the Mexican Revolution in 1916. He grew up in the Watts section of Los Angeles and graduated from Cal State University. Bill has been in the Peace Corps in Ethiopia, has worked in the United States Foreign Service, and in 1991 he was elected as mayor of El Paso, Texas. During his administration, he promoted economic development, established the first El Paso and Ciudad Juarez planning group, pushed for the creation of a pilot desalination treatment plant, played a role in acquiring a site for migrant farm worker shelter in downtown El Paso, and many other things. Since stepping down as mayor, he's worked with environmental groups, and he is now a resident of our fair city, Houston, Texas. Bill, it's a pleasure to have you on the New Capital Show. Welcome.
Thank you. I very much appreciate that. Just wanted to say that your intro was super, and I think that the historical background is just great.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to have you on. Immigration is a hot topic here in the United States. Why? Why is it? Why is it something that gets people so up in arms?
I think because it cuts to our core, to our own, to our being. It is an emotional issue. There's no doubt about it. If we look at it historically, going back to Ellis Island, all the people in the 19th century immigrating to the United States, it seemed a normal route. Today, along the southern border, more so even than the northern border, there is an emotional tug at people. I had the great opportunity to serve as Consul General in Ciudad Juarez across from El Paso, and I saw the pressures that were brought to bear. If you look at immigration there in El Paso and Juarez, there's literally 12 million people living along this border, more than in New Hampshire and in Iowa and a lot of other places.
12 million along
the U.S.-Mexican border.
The U.S.-Mexican border.
Correct. And a lot of them have incredible ties to both sides of that border. Historically, economically, politically, it's something, just because you have a border does not mean that you can't have inordinate cultural ties and social and familial ties.
And in many ways, the border is an artificial construct. There's a river, but on one side of this river, in this case the Rio Grande, on one side of the river, minimum wages are set at X, and on the other side they're set at Y, and yet there's very little to hold that type of disparity in place.
Absolutely. There's just whether the Rio Grande or the Rio Bravo has water in it for irrigation purposes or just as a boundary, there is nothing that really separates them outside of a mental separation. The Mexican side of the border, given the global manufacturing and the growth along the border of the maquiladoras, yes, they are earning more than they are in the interior of Mexico, but it's still an inordinate disparity between crossing that line into the U.S.
Why do I don't know if you want to call it conservatives or let's not put any labels, but why are there so many who are willing to make such vociferous pronouncements against immigrants coming to this country? Are they concerned about difference in culture? Are they concerned about economic issues? Are they concerned about crime? And are their concerns valid?
I can understand people's concerns. You're seeing, in a demographic sense, a change in the population makeup here of the Southwest and further afield. From my vantage point, the people who are concerned about it largely are not here on the border. They are in faraway places, whether it's in Iowa or New Hampshire or whether it's in the state of Washington. If you look at what is happening on the border, there's very strong economic integration. El Paso would not be able to survive in its present form if it wasn't for what's unfolding on the water side. Whether we're talking about exports, Texas alone, apart from just El Paso, there's exports into Mexico of about $50 billion a year of goods coming from the state of Texas, which creates an awful lot of jobs.
And what is the impact of immigrants who are here, whether they're legal or undocumented? What is the do you know the economic impact of those people who are here working in our restaurants and construction sites and so forth, the people I alluded to in my monologue? It must be enormous.
It's huge. I mean, we can talk about here in the city of Houston. All you got to do is go down streets here, Westheimer and Elgin, see who's taking care of the trees, who's pruning them, who's taking care of the parks, who's doing the construction work. 45% here in Texas of all agricultural workers are undocumented workers, which is kind of surprising. You say, well, heaven, who's out there working? Well, it is people largely from Mexico that have taken these jobs that are low paying. They do not want to remain in that position. They want to improve their lifestyles. They want to become part of the American dream.
Do they want citizenship? Because there's a debate over that, right? Do they want to become citizens, or would they be satisfied to have some guest worker program which would allow them to work here and yet return home? There may not be a way to generalize, but what from your vantage point is their desire?
Their desire is citizenship.
Uh-huh.
There's no doubt about it. I can once I retired from the Foreign Service and from stepping down as mayor, I had the privilege of working at Jackie Robinson Academy, a middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And if you looked at the composition or the makeup of the classes, largely Hispanic, largely of recent immigrants. And all of them were strongly motivated to become U.S. citizens. They looked at the United States. They looked to Shaq out there playing basketball. They looked to the Yao Mings of this world and others who are, you know, Yao being an immigrant is a good role model for a lot of people. But what I'm saying is that the idea of them become citizens is, I think, very much on their mind, because it also impacts upon their immigration status, which is another facet.
My guest today is Bill Tilney. Bill was mayor of El Paso, Texas, from 1991 to 1993.
Right? Correct.
1993, has served in foreign service positions as a diplomat, and his own background is, of course, an immigrant background, a descendant of both Scottish and Mexican ancestors. And our number here is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT, as we talk about the issue of immigration. And of course, when people hear the word immigration these days, they almost hear the word illegal in front of that word immigration. And the whole issue of immigration is now bound up with the issue of people who are coming here in an unauthorized basis, crossing the border, and obtaining work here. As I pointed out in my editorial, it seems to me that the federal government dropped the ball in creating enough legal slots over the past few decades to meet the economic demand that has occurred. Is that the case, Bill, or am I way off base?
I think that's part of it. The way in which the federal government over the last 40, 50 years has used the border as a political football. I've always strongly insisted that if we're looking at securing the border and things of that nature, we'd be looking at the Border Patrol, increasing the Border Patrol. However, if you look at immigration as a whole, people want to come across into the United States largely because of wages. They want to come here because of the opportunity to work and the fact that there are ways in which they can improve their living conditions. That will continue. I don't see any change. I think that Mexico is, in essence, when they talk about NAFTA, and which is a sore point among many people, Mexico, the United States, and Canada, one way or the other, whether it's official or unofficial, is going to find itself becoming more and more integrated for economic reasons and the fact that they're going to have to compete against the rest of the world. Immigrants are going to be extremely important in that mix.
I have seen the claim that NAFTA and also agricultural policies have put downward pressure, enormous downward pressure, on the price of agricultural products in Mexico and other Latin American countries. And this has hurt farmers in those countries who have then had to respond by coming north. Is there any truth to that viewpoint?
There could be some truth to that when you think about Mexico actually subsidized for a long time its agricultural industry.
And the U.S. subsidizes its farmers, and therefore those subsidized crops have, through in the wake of NAFTA, have made their way cheaply into Mexico, forcing again, farmers in Mexico to come north and find other employment.
That's correct. It's where your campesinos or your immigrants are coming from are largely still from the agricultural sector in Mexico because of the inability to earn a living. And I think that will continue. The big issue, as far as I'm concerned, is if we're looking at NAFTA or we're looking at immigration, is the fact that Mexico has to join forces with the United States and Canada to find itself, at least to improve its economic living conditions. The United States can play a major role in that. If they don't, we're going to continue with this carousel for a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about your stint as mayor of El Paso. What was that like? How does the immigration issue affect the mayor of El Paso and the city of El Paso and its sister city across the river, the city of Juarez?
Well, it has huge implications. I mean, serving as mayor of El Paso, you're going to be worried about everything from trash pickup to what happens in your health clinics. You're impacted by immigrants coming across from the border, of course, because they take advantage of some of these services. But at the same time, they're coming across to work in El Paso and the surrounding areas. Taxes is a big issue, of course, and it impacts upon citizenry, and you will find grumbling among many people saying that the immigrants are causing us to pay more taxes. And in many instances, you could say that really isn't the case. It balances out.
What did you find when you were mayor of El Paso? You had to look at budgets, you had to look at city services and so forth.
Absolutely.
What about this claim that illegal immigration, undocumented immigration into this country, the strain that it puts on public services far outweighs the benefits of economic output that is generated?
Well, let's put it this way. If you have a very large populace on the Mexican side of the border that has global manufacturing and plants such as Siemens, Philips, General Electric, Ford, Toyota, and all of these
are right on the border.
Are right on the border, and they are, let's say, pumping monies into the economy. The people on the Mexican side of the border are coming over to the U.S. side, and what are they doing? They're making purchases, and they are paying sales tax, and they're paying other taxes when they do come across. As far as people that work in the maquila industry, there are a number of them that have been able to migrate and purchase homes in El Paso and, in essence, pay property taxes, which is a big issue. It helps to balance the budget, which is pretty tough in El Paso because of the nature of the standard of living and also, you know, wages across the board. But we can argue about this, you know, ad nauseum, about whether or not the Mexican or the immigrant coming from Mexico or from south is drawing down on health care, social services, or contributing to the improvement with the to the economy on the El Paso side.
There are proposals by the U.S. federal government. I think there are even some implementations that are taking place of border fences. what is the regard for this concept in El Paso, in other places along the border, among Mexicans, among Americans living north of the border? What is the general perspective on this idea?
Well, there's two things I want to touch upon. One is that cartoon that shows a fence being built by Homeland Security, 18 foot, on one side, and on the other side of the river, it shows Raulito's little shop selling 21 foot ladders. Beyond that, I just want to go back to a time in 1991 when the Berlin Wall was falling. The mayor of Ciudad Juarez, Chuy Macias, and myself, along with a delegation of the University of Texas, were invited to the Polish-German border. And our reason for going there was to demonstrate that the borders, U.S.-Mexican border, cooperated on economic integration, worked together on commercial issues. And we sat down with these Polish academicians who were old-line communists and showed that two different economies actually can work to their advantage. And I think we've seen that now today where Poland, its standard of living has improved remarkably because it's becoming more and more integrated into the European common market and working with Germany. If we were doing that 15 years ago, and here today we're talking about putting up a wall outside in the very remote areas of the Southwest, it just seems to run contrary to the spirit of what we were attempting to do back there in the early 1990s.
Mm-hmm. This is the New Capital Show. I'm Leo Gold, your host, and my guest is Bill Tilney, former mayor of El Paso, diplomat, and now resident of our city of Houston. 713-526-5738 is the number. We'll be taking your calls in just a few minutes. 713-526-KPFT. Bill, I want to go back to my question. This idea that I have and I can't let go of, that if somebody had gone to Congress, the federal government, in 1970 and said, look, there is going to be tremendous growth in California, in Arizona, in Texas, in Illinois. There's going to be growth. There's going to be homes that are going to be built. A lot of them are going to be made out of stucco and concrete and brick. There's going to be an explosion of restaurants in these places. There's going to be an increase in the number of households seeking domestic help and child care and so forth. We're going to need 10 million people, and we have a wonderful resource just south of the border. We think we have room to accept 10 million new citizens into the country, just like we did in 1880 when we accepted whatever the number was, 1900 when we accepted whatever the number was, and at that time they were Italians and Jews and Irish and Germans and Swedes and so forth. We're going to see growth in this country. There are going to be jobs that need to be filled. We need to accept 10 million people. Why didn't that happen? And now we have 10 million people who are here without citizenship and so-called illegally or undocumented. Why did the federal government not prepare for the economic realities that have occurred?
I think the bottom line is politics. Back in 1965, when the changed the legislation on immigration, they did open it up to a certain degree, which in essence saw a much larger flow of immigrants coming from Latin America, but it was not near the numbers that would be required to see what, you know, to respond to the explosion in terms of economic growth in California and Illinois and states across the nation. 10 million people or 12 million people, it's so hard to say whether, you know, you can put a handle on the numbers of 10 million or 12 million people that are undocumented here in the United States. But if you're saying whether we should have done it, yes, we should have, in hindsight. But it's not going to happen. It didn't happen. It was done in a helter-skelter way. And it has helped to create the conditions that we're faced with today. How do we find ways to resolve the status of 12 million undocumented immigrants who are presently in the United States?
But now, when there are proposals to grant citizenship or even something less than that, a worker-type visa, we're told by those who oppose it that this amounts to amnesty. And the question I have is, why is it amnesty when it should have been citizenship in the first place? And there's an argument to be made that what we're actually doing is going back and rectifying something that we failed to put in place 30, 40 years ago.
Oh, we could have put this in place back during World War II. People have forgotten about the Bracero program was originally started in 1942 to what? To help in the agricultural fields in the United States while 12 million American soldiers were all fighting in Europe and in Asia.
You're saying that migrant workers helped feed the country during the Second World War.
That's right. It was phased out in 1964, but in 1942 is when the program was undertaken, and it was during World War II that many Mexicans were out there picking in the fields in the Central Valley and across the Southwest to provide foodstuffs for our U.S. Forces serving abroad at that time. So there's a long history. We should have resolved it back in those days because we did have a guest worker program. The guest worker program seemed to have worked at that time because of the need. Problem today is we cannot agree in Congress. There is a real logjam in Congress between two sides. Compromise is the only way really to go, and I think that's what we have to do. The emotional issues of saying these illegals are potential terrorists or things of that nature is total balderdash.
There's no evidence of that, is there?
No. I mean, if you go and look, I mean, having been served on that border and having served in the Foreign Service for almost 27 years, I can say that no terrorists came from the border. They came through other ports of entry, whether we're talking about legally or whether they came from Canada. There has been no record of any terrorist that has come in the United States and has taken actions, whether it was in the 1994 World Trade Center incident or whether back the 9/11.
Okay, let's go to the phone, 713-526-5738. First up will be Laura for Bill Tilney. Welcome, Laura. Laura?
We lost.
We lost Laura? All right, we lost her. Let's take Willie. Whoop. Willie?
It's a couple.
Willie? Hello? We're having some trouble with the phones. 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. This is the New Capital Show. Bill Tilney, former mayor of El Paso, is with us today. Next up, let's try Teresa. Teresa. Nope. Bob, we must be having a problem with the phones. Teresa. Okay, Bill, let's you and I get back to you and I get back to our interview. You want me to try line 3? All right. Susan. Susan. Nope. Okay, Bob, I think we're having a problem with the phone. You're probably going to have to get a little bit of backup, and we'll see if we can get callers coming through. We're having a few technical difficulties right now. Bill, what would you like to see happen? There are all these different proposals, all the way from citizenship being granted to people who are here in an undocumented fashion, to worker guest programs, to building walls, to deporting people. Are there any other ideas that you have that you think are workable, or are any of those ideas something that you see as possible and workable?
That is, you know, that is a good question. How are we going to resolve the dilemma that faces us today? I would say this, that a wall along the border is not really going to serve its purpose. If we're talking about Border Patrol, the Border Patrol for a long time was a political football. Congress did not want to ever address the issue. If they would have done it 15, 20 years ago and increased the manpower and training, we would have had a much better situation on the border than we have today without putting up a wall along the lines of the Great Wall of China. Technical issues, you know, or surveillance cameras, those things are fine in terms of wanting to secure the border. But being realistic, I think there's other things at play, whether they're contracts, whether we're talking about cameras and other technical instruments that are so easily to dismantle or are very easy to go out of commission. So the big thing is having a presence on the border, which I think is the Border Patrol, which would process people in a proper manner and secure the border, not the National Guard and not a wall itself.
So you see a right of the United States to secure its border. You're not claiming that there is no right not to secure the border and not to have an orderly process along the border.
Absolutely. I think that we have to secure our borders. There's no doubt about it. However, going back to the point I made earlier, there hasn't been any terrorist threats coming from the southern border as of this moment. And 89% of all of the Border Patrol agents are serving today. I think that about 11,000 are serving on the Mexican border. Securing the border is the big thing. The second is what you're going to do with the North American trade or NAFTA. Whether indeed, I know there's people up in Ohio and Michigan that are very fearful of what's unfolded because of the damage it's done to their economies. It hasn't happened here in Texas because we've profited, frankly, from what's unfolded with NAFTA as far as commerce. Mexico and the United States have $290 billion worth of trade.
Mm-hmm.
That is an inordinate amount of trade. It's moved into first place, notwithstanding Walmart and China. Overall, though, you know, going back to resolving this problem, it's going to take some very strong efforts by Congress, not politicizing it, but trying to realistically deal with the problems of what do you do with 12 million illegal immigrants, if you want to use the term undocumented or illegal. How are they going to be integrated into the society, or are they going to be returned? It's very doubtful. All you have to do is go to schools, whether they're in Texas, California, and you will find that the children of those immigrants are in the schools.
As time goes on and these immigrants have children, their children are afforded citizenship status by virtue of having been born here in the United States.
Well, that's correct. Under our laws, a child born in the United States is an automatic American citizen, and so therefore it would be entitled to all rights.
Are we good on the phone, Steve? All right. We're going to give it another try. Okay. Let's try Laura. Laura.
Hello.
Okay, I'm sorry. We're back up on the phones, folks. Thanks to Steve and Bob for getting us straightened out here. Go ahead, Laura.
I have a comment to make in regards to immigration. A lot of the immigrants come here because we hurt their governments. The U.S. government has also covertly installed dictators in their country, and you could go to www.soaw.org, that's School of America's Watch, and we often train their military officers and police and torture and things like that.
So, Laura, you're saying...
Other techniques of repression?
You're saying that we have taken actions in this hemisphere which have caused a destabilization of other governments, and that's caused people to flee those countries.
Yes, or we have installed, it's not so much destabilization as installing repressive regimes or backing up repressive regimes.
And let's see what Bill Tilney thinks about that. Bill, what are your thoughts on that U.S. government policy in other countries?
Well, I think if we're looking towards Latin America, which seems to be the subject of conversation today, I would say that, there's a long history of U.S. Military training, let's say, military forces in countries in Latin America, especially with Southern Command in Panama. That is well known. However, I think if you look further south and you look at Chile, you look at Argentina, you look at Brazil with Lula, these countries are evolving more as democracies than many other places around the world today, and they are beginning to thrive economically, socially, and politically. Yes, there are some instances here within Latin America where you will still see some authorities or some powers that are in place that we would view as dictatorial or quasi-dictatorial, but I think it's not near as bad as it is in other parts of the world, and that's why I have such hope for the Western Hemisphere.
Laura, thanks for the call. Okay, let's see. Let's take Marie next. Hi, Marie. Welcome to the New Capital Show.
Hi, thank you. Mm-hmm. Just a couple of quick comments. I'd like some feedback. I'm amazed. To me, we have a global economy. It's very well established. It serves, God knows, it serves our major corporations very, very well indeed. who've taken all the tax advantages of expanding abroad. If there's no intent to fix this problem at the national level, if there were, then, although I don't believe in this, people who hire illegal immigrants would be made to pay. You keep fooling around at the outer edges of the problem and breaking up families and deporting people and making people's lives hell.
What do you want to see happen, Marie? What would you like to see?
I want to see an absolutely clear path to citizenship. I don't want to be within these people's lives while they're still young. I want the kids who, unfortunately, in some states may have even been born here, but now there's a movement to say, well, your parents came here illegally, so you can't go on to college or graduate school. You know, these are human beings. We share the planet. This is a bogus issue. There is no threat of terrorism from that particular border. The ones I know about all came through Canada. And I want us to get real. I want us to start being human beings. And, you know, it's a bogus issue, again, that these people are usurping all the resources. I suggest people think for 1 minute what the cost of food or any other thing that they indulge in would be. And we'd have a different policy. Unfortunately, the only people who've ever been punished in the slightest for hiring so-called illegal aliens, I guess, were the women who had daycare, Zoe Baird, and so forth, and didn't pay the Social Security.
Okay, Bill Tilney, what about this?
Let's get real.
Okay, Marie, thanks for the call. Bill, is there any truth to Marie's feeling that there is no real intent to solve this problem at the national and federal level, and that it's simply a political issue that's utilized by different sides for their own purposes?
Well, I think we're at a political impasse, and I think that there are those that have taken advantage of it. There's no doubt about it. As far as, you know, corporations that are south of the border, yes, they have taken advantage of laws and tax laws and other issues that have been put in place by Congress in order to allow them to go abroad and make profit. They have on the global manufacturing side in Mexico. They've done very well. There's 2,700 maquiladoras or global manufacturing firms in Mexico, which is an inordinate growth over the last 10-15 years. However, if we go back to talking about children and talking about the path to citizenship, if they're born in the United States, they will be accorded American citizenship. I do not see a change in that. It's an emotional issue with Americans, since we're all, right, Leo, children of immigrants.
We are.
And I don't think that's going to go away. There may make some noise, but I don't see that changing. I do believe, though, that on the economic side, where you're talking about large companies here in the United States being fined, they've increased it from $11,000 to $16,000, the fine that would be put on employers that hired undocumented workers. I know they go into litigation and lawsuits, but I haven't seen really much really come out of that. We still have a long ways to go. But if you really, really want to shut down undocumented workers coming to the United States, yes, go to the two firms in the United States, large firms, and say, hey, you will be fined $5 million for employing people, and maybe it would stop. Mm-hmm. But I don't see us going in that direction at this point in time. As far as going back to the issue of citizenship, I think that anybody that wants to come here and work is keen on becoming American citizen, because eventually becoming American citizen because of the fact of all the rights and privileges that are accorded them.
Okay, let's take Barry. Barry, welcome to the New Capital Show.
Yes, sir. I got some issues here with the host and the guests. First of all, could we get the language straight? They are illegal aliens.
Mm-hmm.
They're not undocumented workers. But if you're in denial of that, there's no point in going on. So the proper language here is illegal aliens.
Well,
have you heard of an organization called FAIR, F-A-I-R?
Yes.
Okay, could we get FAIR on your show sometime, sir, to get the other side of the issue here? Because we're only hearing one side of it.
Well, Barry, you hear a lot of the issue on many other radio stations.
My question to you is, could we get FAIR on? That was the question.
Well, I don't know. You're proposing it, and I'll look into this organization.
Okay,
I may have them on.
According to FAIR, it's a $45 billion hit we take each year with the hospitals and the schools and the crime. Mm-hmm. If these people all come into work, how is that 25% of them are in federal prison? 25% of all federal prisoners are illegal aliens. The illegal aliens coming over here can run back across the border after committing a crime with no prosecution. That is sickening. What we need is a fence put up on the southern border, need to deport the illegal aliens, and enforce the law. The law is, if you need to come here legally, why should people in Europe and Africa have to stand in line 5 years and pay $1,000 to get over here, and the illegal Mexican get over here free?
Mm-hmm.
So could we get real on the facts? The facts are they are illegal aliens. They don't belong here. They need to go through the legal route to get here. They're costing us $45 billion a year. Now, let's talk about some. They're paying sales tax. Well, the sales tax money doesn't begin to cover the hospital costs alone, which in Harris County alone was $100 million for illegal aliens. And the Social Security money means they stole some American Social Security number. That's also illegal.
Yep. Okay.
So you got illegal criminals.
Okay, Barry. Let's let our guest respond. Thanks for the call, Bill. Barry is pointing out that this organization FAIR, which we'll look into, has figures showing that the economic balance of the presence of what he calls illegal aliens, undocumented workers. This is rhetorically important to him that they be known as illegal aliens, that the economic balance is actually not in our favor as Americans from this group. And also, what about the issue of those who are trying to enter the country and become citizens through legal means and through whatever Byzantine processes there are to admit people, and that they're getting jumped in front of in terms of people who are coming here to work? What about those two issues?
Well, let me just start off by saying yes. If we, the term illegal immigrants is a term that is in use at the federal level. There's no doubt about that. As far as immigrants coming in through the legal process, that was my job. Ciudad Juarez was one of the largest immigrant visa posts in the United in the world, and what we did on a daily basis was process those people who were intending immigrants so that they could legally enter the United States. And we're talking in very large numbers. When you're talking about putting up a wall, I understand what you're saying about putting up a wall, but the thing is, the wall, from my vantage point, it will not work. Putting in Border Patrol agents, putting in technical surveillance equipment, working with the cities along the border to ensure that we have a secure border, I think will do much better. In that regard, we already have walls in California. We have from Santa Teresa in New Mexico all the way to Fabens, for all intent and purpose, both a wall and a river that is concreted in and serves as a very good deterrent. Where you're finding the illegal immigration coming in is much more so in some of the areas in Arizona, New Mexico, which have led to approximately 400 deaths to 400 to 500 deaths a year in recent times.
Bill, let me get you to hang on. Now, we have our friend Ray Hill, who is the host of The Prison Show, and Ray, I think, will be interested to join our conversation here. Yeah. Maybe we might talk about the previous caller. Ray, welcome.
Well, thank you very much. I had to call after the previous caller because it's a classic example of the power of propaganda. This issue is so propagandized, and it benefits the extreme right wing in this country so much to divide constituencies which should normally be allies. It divides black community from the Hispanic community by a bunch of misstatements and wrong things, and if anybody thinks anybody just runs across the border to beat crime, they don't have my position on The Prison Show, or they'd know better.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so much propaganda going on, and I'm getting tired of this country being manipulated by Rush Limbaugh and his minions.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what has happened to this issue. Dobbs and Limbaugh and the right-wing nuts have just taken this issue and run with it. And I want my country back. I want the thinking of American brains back. I want good, freedom-loving Americans to join in coalition and start dividing up into camps and fighting one another.
Ray, great to have you.
Thank you.
What about that, Bill? Ray's point is that callers and rank-and-file people in this country share common interests with those who are coming across the border to work here. They're not taking jobs that aren't available. The jobs are available, and that there is a political effort to divide people who would otherwise have common cause in voting together, and working to make change in the country of a positive nature. Anything to that?
Yeah, going back, to the idea of divide and conquer. Maybe you have something there, because the 12 million people that live along the border are concerned with their daily lives. They're concerned with security. They're concerned with their futures and, as I say, economic livelihood. They're not out there trying to play a role in surreptitiously having people come across the border illegally. And if you look at the number of crossings, there's 250 million crossings. 250 million crossings on the southern border. If we're talking about less than a million, you're talking 1/3 of 1% coming across the border that would be quotes of an illegal nature. Mm-hmm. And in that regard, going back to the hospitals, Thomason Hospital, which is the county hospital in which I chaired for a period of time, yes, it was impacted by what happened at the other side of the border, but they did not have insurance in some of the larger maquilas or global manufacturing firms that were taking advantage of doing business in Mexico, and therefore they came across. But they were not the numbers, not 25% when it comes to people that are illegally or are detained or imprisoned. You will not find those figures, at least from my vantage point.
Okay, let's keep going here. We've only got a couple more minutes. Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can get a couple calls in here. Katya, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. In regards to that prior caller stating that laws and illegal and trying to label all these people, well, he might forget that just less than a half a century ago, it used to be illegal for a black person to drink from the same water fountain or to sit anywhere in the bus that they wanted to, because that was a law. And it took a civil rights movement to change that law. And I think that that's just what it's going to take in this situation, because laws are made by men and laws are revoked by men.
Mm-hmm. Katya, thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Let's get a couple more calls in here real quick. Let's take Susan on line three. Hey, Susan.
Hi. I wanted to approach this from the point of view of somebody who's always been concerned about human rights.
Mm-hmm.
I feel extremely concerned about the social justice and the human rights of all the people who come across to try to get a better life. I would really like to see an amnesty. I would like to see a lot of these people given a quick path to citizenship who are here and who come to do hard work.
You're saying, Susan, you would like to see policy put the human issue first.
Yeah, but I would tell you, as a kind of a left of center person who is concerned about these issues, the one thing that does disturb me tremendously is the Mexican government. I think that there's a huge amount of crime. I have a lot of Hispanic friends who cross the border frequently who are American citizens and go back to see relatives there. They say that the situation with drug gangs on the other side of the border from Laredo, from in the Monterey area, in the small towns there,
okay,
is horrific.
Okay,
right
now. We've only got a minute left. I'm going to let Bill Tilney comment. Okay, thanks. Bill Tilney, what about Mexican government, Mexican crime gangs, this issue?
That is a huge issue right now, and the Calderon, the president of Mexico, is attempting to deal with it, and it's not going to be easy because it has grown just exponentially. In El Paso and Juarez, many people that in previous times would go over into Juarez no longer going there because they are concerned about narcotraficantes. That is something that has to be addressed. It also calls for cooperation on both sides, not just of preventive nature, but of trying to work together so you can come up with a solution to drug trafficking across our borders. The other point you mentioned about amnesty, I understand that term, but it's somewhat pejorative among many people. The thing is to get people in a legal status that would permit them to work in the United States and contribute to the welfare of this nation.
Bill Tilney, we're out of time. Teresa, Rick, and Rick, I'm sorry we didn't get to you today. We'll try to get to you next time. This has been another edition of the New Capital Show, www.newcapitalshow.com. Go see Robert Redford tonight and sign up for the race, Mothers for Clean Air. and it is a pleasure to have been with you. Back with you next week. Bill, thanks again.
Thank you.
Voices Breaking Boundaries and Words Without Borders present Words for Peace 5, Condemn Invasion, on Sunday, March 30th at 7 p.m. at Diverse Works Art Space, 1117 East Freeway, Houston, 77002. Writers, musicians, and cartoonists will offer a window into the culture of Iraq, Lebanon, and Iran, as well as their personal responses to war and invasion. Featured artists include a reading by Iraqi writer Naheem Wali, cartoons by Lebanese artist Massen Kervaj, and much more. All this on Sunday, March 30th, 7 p.m. Onward at Diverse Works. For more information, go to vbbarts.org or call 713-524-7821. This is KPFT Houston. In 1971, a courageous group of veterans exposed the criminal nature of the Vietnam War in an event called Winter Soldier. This month, members of Iraq Veterans Against the War will give first-person accounts of what is really happening day in and day out on the ground. The events will bring together veterans from across the country to testify about their experiences in Iraq and Afghanistan and present video and photographic evidence of war crimes they have witnessed. In addition, there will be panels of scholars, veterans, journalists, and other specialists to give context to the testimony. Join KPFT at noon from March 24th through 28th for a special series of open journals. Pacifica Radio will provide coverage of the historic Winter Soldier event. Again, tune in.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.